know, he doesn't want to cut a pound. His body won't let him cut a pound. Well, then you better win the tournament, okay?
That's BS. That's bull crap.
He's got some big balls, man.
You zip your lip, you shut your mouth, and you open your ears. That's how you win. That's how you get better.
Win, you live. Lose, you die. All right, on today's podcast, we got Quake Cooper. He's an assistant professor at the UNC Chapel Hill in sports administration and a 2004 All-American for Indiana. Quake, how you doing, bud?
Good. Thanks for having me, man. I appreciate it.
We just worked through our Skype issues, so we're excited that we can have good conversation here, you know? So it's a good place to start for us, right?
Yeah, oh, absolutely. I have a hard time hearing you on the phone, so... Beautiful thing about technology is you can just use that and we'll have a good conversation.
What's the I think a lot of people kind of at this point have gotten the memo that you're really involved in sort of the marketing aspect of wrestling, that you know, why don't you explain kind of your tact, not just as a professional outside of wrestling, but also what you're doing inside of the sport?
Yeah, and I'll start with this. I mean, you know, people sometimes ask, you know, what's the reasoning for getting involved? And I think a lot like you, and, you know, you've gone through the sport and it makes you who you are. I mean, you just, the way that you approach life is because of wrestling. And I really have gotten a lot out of it. And I had a great coach back in high school who just influenced me a great deal. And he always said, hey, man, you've got to get back to wrestling in some way. And so, you know, every day for me, it's trying to find a way to give back. And so, you know, the good thing was, is I moved on from coaching and I went into this role and I found that I can do more for the sport, you know, as somebody who is a professor studying marketing, understanding university structure, culture, I can do more for the sport in that position. So I've become involved. I mean, I got, you know, connected with the NWCA and Mike Moyer really wanted me to be involved in helping. And so he brought me down to the convention. I did some presentations on marketing and was just amazed at the response that I got from coaches. And it just really surprised me. I know they're super competitive, but it was really cool to see them, you know, take the stuff that you were working on and get out and just really get after it. So I started with it with a smaller role where I was just doing presentations. And then last year, Mike found a way to build a relationship with NCAA, with their wrestling area. And they were generous enough to be a part or on a marketing manual project that we worked on last year and got out to coaches. And so I've moved through that. Coaches have that as a resource. And I talk to coaches as much as I possibly can. Whenever coaches want to talk marketing, how to grow their program, I just try to make myself available. So, you know, I think more than that, but that's just kind of a synopsis of what's happened so far.
So who are some of the programs that are most active and sort of have taken your platform or have worked with you or have done independently really well in some of their marketing? In my mind, you know, Chattanooga jumps out. It's somebody that Rob Cole even mentioned in a conversation we had a couple days ago. But, you know, I think Chattanooga is one of those teams you see doing a lot of work. Duke, programs that are sort of not maybe producing multiple All-Americans every year, but you seem to have good marketing, or at least.
Yeah, I think you're right. And I think one of the interesting things is sometimes your big programs don't have to do a lot to market themselves. And that doesn't mean that they wouldn't benefit from doing it and doing exactly what some of these other programs are doing. But it just so happens right now it's easier to get some of these programs who are trying to build to jump on board. And Tennessee Chattanooga has been amazing. I mean, I can't say enough about what they've done. I mean, Rocco Mansueto calls on a very regular basis with ideas, and it started with him calling and saying, hey, what do we need to do, to where now he's calling and saying, I have this idea, or he's calling and saying, hey, man, I want to use Photoshop more. What do I got to do to take the next step? And he's just been really active, and, you know, Heath is the same way. You know, he called the other day and wanted to know just my opinion on, you know, what's going on in wrestling and the marketing aspect. So those guys have just been amazing. And as a result, their social media presence is just really, really strong. I mean, they're building their followers. You know, they have their marketing department who's bought into what they're doing and trying to help them do that. You know, their attendance is consistently growing because they're just so active. And so they're a program that I immediately think of. I mean, Maryland has been, from the get-go, Maryland's been really strong with their social media presence and building there. I love what South Dakota State is doing this year with Chris Bono. He's one of the very rare head coaches that I see who are so active with what they're doing in marketing. I mean, he is completely bought in, and I love seeing that. And there's a lot of other programs, you know, that if we really went into it, we could mention doing some neat stuff. I mean, we always think about Division One, but you know, there's Division Two and Division Three programs jumping on board as well. So it's just, like I said, it's really neat to see, you know, a competitive bunch of people when you challenge them in a way, you know, to tell them we're right now we're a niche sport. You know, people don't want to be a niche sport. Well, then we're going to have to take a pretty unique approach to make things happen. So.
Sorry.
Chattanooga, I think right now is what they're set standard.
No, I think so. You think they are the standard? Yeah, I think it's important also to remember. You know, it's not just some of this is. You know, you have to be able to produce a product, and you know, for each of these schools, I think one of the misperceptions. I mean, you know, as former coaches, I think we can both talk about this plainly. Like. We might see our job as just producing All-Americans or just producing conference champions or people that are going to be marketable, we would think, to the larger audience. But really, it's just about getting your fans involved, because we talk about wrestling, we talk about stability within the athletic community at a university and being able to show good crowds, at least some positive, you know, revenue, maybe not profit, but some good revenue and, you know, the donations that some of them bring in are also really important, and outreach I think Brendan Buckley is the head coach at Cal Poly, used to be at Columbia, used to always say friend raising, you know, it's not about fundraising. Yeah. It's about friend raising. So, you know, you might not even be, you know, guys who used to wrestle, but at Columbia, for example, but it was guys who used to wrestle at like a D3 school in Massachusetts, but owned a restaurant in New York City. And all of a sudden they're coming to matches and donating $5,000 a year. You know, that's all pot. I mean, money's money to the university, and you know, being able to have a good marketing program is helpful.
Yeah. And I think you hit on two things that I always think is important for coaches to hear. And number one is that, you know, with the mentality, you know, people always say this, well, what helps you with marketing? And people say winning. And I'm not going to disagree with that. You win at Penn State, it's going to help you fill the stands, no question about it. But if that's the mentality that we have, is you have to win, not everybody can win. And if that's what we expect to happen to be able to market, then we're going to have 85, 90% of our programs that can't draw. And the thing that I always tell them is understanding that there's the product that's on the mat. And as a coach, I tell them, you want to develop that. No question you want to win. I would never tell you to do otherwise. But understanding that there's other things that you can do. I mean, you can provide entertainment, you know, on the side. You know, there's promotional giveaways. There's different types of entertainment. And I know there's some coaches that want to fight that and don't want that to happen because they say it's not wrestling. But, you know, to be honest, the sport industry, entertainment industry is evolving. Younger generations expect to be entertained. And so at least wrestling's going to have to say, what are the things that we can do? And you know, the great example, the team we just talked about, UTC at the Southern Scuffle, you know, they're getting headgear. They're having John Smith and Kale Sanderson sign it. They're throwing it out during the rounds. And it was funny because I talked to Rocco and I said, well, you know, how'd that go? And he said, you know, it was funny because when we first started doing it, people in the crowd didn't know what to do because they'd never seen anybody do giveaways like that.
Yeah.
But he said by the later rounds, people were going crazy for it. And so there's this supplementary entertainment that anybody can do to create more value and draw in different groups. And so that's one thing. And then the second part that you said, I think is as important as anything coaches can do. And that's building support around their program. You know, that starts with, you know, it starts with what you do with your athletes. You should be building a positive relationship with them to when they leave, they want to help you, and they want to help you in fundraising and growing. You know, it branches out to making sure that your guys are representing themselves well on campus to where professors and students want to support you. And then it extends on to what you're talking about, which is, you know, trying to build support, you know, with fundraising or, you know, fan raising, you know, those terms that you say, you know, when you get people close to you, friend raising, then you're going to have more people that want to support. And the bottom line is you have to invest in people. You have to actively seek out people, make them a fan of their program. And Brian Smith at Missouri does this as good as anybody. Rob Cole is great at this, is as good at this as well. But they're very, very good about reaching out. And Brian Smith always says, I see every person that I meet as a potential fan of Missouri wrestling. And there's no question that that's paid dividends. So I think it's important that we recognize that that's a part of marketing as well. And I think you hit the nail on the head with that.
You know, going forward for the next few years, what are going to be the strategic, you know, opportunities? What are the opportunities that are going to be most strategic for the wrestling community to capitalize on?
Well, I think the one that you've talked about, it will never be flashy. It's not going to get a ton of attention, but we got to continue to get coaches to buy into marketing their program, you know, reaching out like what we're talking about. We have resources in place. And you know what? If we can get the bigger programs, I know that they're so focused on winning, but if we can get guys like Kale Sanderson, and I know he actually is interested in this stuff, but if we get them to continue to invest in, you know, promotions and marketing their program, which he's already doing, it sets a standard for other programs. I think that that's absolutely critical. So, you know, getting them to buy in, I think it branches out to also what we talked about before, you know, not seeing things as, you know, okay, here's a great example. People always, when they want to change wrestling, they think about what they think is the best idea. And coaches are going to have to step out and say, okay, not necessarily what's easiest for me, but what's the best for, you know, positioning our product to where people are going to want to come and watch it. And so building off of that, I think that there's things that coaches, supporters, and people surrounding the sport need to think about. And some of those things are going to involve things like rules. I mean, I think we have rules in place right now that are complicated. And I just wrote a blog entry the other day where I talked about how, you know, you get to overtime. And I've done some work for ESPN, and they ask you, well, what's going on? And when you go into the multiple criterias, and I'll tell them, I don't know sometimes. And then you get to where you have a dual meet that's tied, and it moves down that criteria ladder, and it's very, very confusing. And so I think coaches need to continue to look at their sport where they're going to maintain what the core of it is, but say, how do we make things simple? How do we create simple rules that create more action? And take a look at that. And so I think that that's something. And one thing that I talked to coaches about recently is the idea. And I don't know if this is the perfect idea, but I've heard this floated from top coaches, and I won't name any names, but people have talked about, you know, just basic things like a push-up rule. And whether you hate it or you like it, rules like this, something where it's very simple to understand, might be exactly what a sport needs, because then what happens is when you're bringing in college students and they don't understand any aspect other than the pin, then they can understand a part of the sport. And that's what I always tell people is if you look at some of the bigger sports, it doesn't matter if you understand all the rules in football and basketball. You understand when there's a touchdown. You understand when there's a first down. You understand when people are scoring a basket. And with wrestling, I know immediately people would say, well, what about the pin? And I'd say, absolutely, people understand the pin. But you know as well as I do, and top dual mates, it's very rare for that to happen. You know, sometimes it happens two times, but most of the time it doesn't happen at all. So,
well, yeah, I think it's
I think just taking a look at those rules, you know, even considering, you know, your seasonals. Well, we can stop there.
No, I think
and chat about that a little before.
No, but I think you make a good point about the push-out rule, because that also kind of flows into what we're talking about with the IOC and decisions about rules in that area. Push-out rule, I think, has been awesome. I mean, I think some guys get frustrated by the idea, but giving like a more academic sort of world perspective, push-out, spatial, some traditional styles don't have spatial limitations, real spatial limitations. They'll be in fields and they'll just kind of bump into each other. In other sports, or, you know, obviously the most successful traditional style in the world besides American wrestling, or even probably more successful, would be sumo, which is only a push-out rule. So, I mean, you know, push-out rules, they're not made out of thin air. I mean, there are other societies or other cultures around the world who use it as a determination of dominance, you know, positional dominance. And I think it's really helped freestyle become much more watchable. You know, I watched some of the Olympics with people who don't know a lot about wrestling, and they understood that rule. They got more complicated when you said it's 1-1, but he scored last, that whole thing. But I think rules like that are a good idea. I think it's important to always remember why you're doing things. You know, make sure that you always keep in mind that the sport is rooted in some amount of tradition and that needs to be respected. But at the same time, you're trying to participate on a large marketplace. I mean, it's a sports marketplace is saturated with big time sports, and you know, trying to compete with those guys is going to take some amount of rule changing.
Yeah, no, and I'm with you, and that's why I completely agree. I mean, the potential of you know lining up with what's going on across the world, like you've talked about, and that's the biggest thing is when I go with my interns, you know, to an event and they say what's going on, and I can't explain that to them, or it's really hard for me to explain that to them, and all of a sudden it's moved on to a different aspect of the match. If there was one part where there would constantly be action where there would be scoring that they could easily understand, and not only easily understand, but if you got this down right and all of a sudden there's, you know, people are excited about it, there might be a little bit of controversy. I mean, at least the people in the stands could say, I know what that means. And I think it would happen enough that it would dictate matches, and I think that people could get involved with that. And so, you know, the way that I look at it, I've tried to push away from being a wrestler and exactly what that means, because what I want to do is I want to say, who are potential markets? Well, I can tell you right now, a potential market will always be college students. And if you get college students at the right time, you build loyalty, there's a good chance they're going to be coming back. And with college students, it's that simplification, making it easy for them to understand. And then it kind of does a second thing, which is good for not only these potential consumers, but our current fan base, which is create more action, more scoring. I mean, there's a reason why in big sports, you know, you have the three-point line, you have the shot clock. I mean, you're trying to create more action and scoring, and that's what bigger sports have done. And, you know, I think wrestling doesn't have to be them, but I think that you certainly need to see this from a marketing standpoint. And, you know, you can't complain. You can't say, well, nobody watches our sport and they don't understand. No, at some point you need to say, we need to help them understand. Otherwise, they're not going to come. So I think that's important for coaches to embrace the mindset where they all sit down together and hopefully get past all the maybe conflict that's right. going on and say, what do we do to make things better?
And, you know, even to talk more directly about the rule changes, you know, American style of wrestling goes through significant rule change, not significant rule changes, but we've been eked along since the 1950s from, you know, a sport that may be tough for some younger kids to recognize to where we are now. So, you know, rule changes have always been part of the sport. Adapting to modern culture without losing your traditional aspects is vital. And I think I think as a body, we're intelligent enough. We bicker like old women, but we at least, we seem to produce results on occasion. And then, you know, moving, you know, sort of in line with that and sort of maybe positioning a new topic would be, you know, I think if you look at the NCAA wrestling championships, you have 4 years of sellouts, and the potential now coming into a 4 year cycle of bids from cities, which could provide us a semi-permanent location based on those 4 years of success, you know. People might provide infrastructure to the NCAA to say, hey, if you give us the 4 wrestling championships, we'll also host X, Y, and Z and give you these tax discounts or this amount of green space or whatever it is. And that sort of semi-permanent to permanent location could be the kind of thing that takes the sport and adds an additional 25% or 50% sort of profit, you know, to what has already become a profitable enterprise for the NCAA. And as we know, profit means stability.
Yeah, no, I think that's an important thing to think about. And I know in the past the NCAA, or at least the NWCA with them, has thought about, you know, do you move it around to grow? But I think what you need to do with that event is find a location that's very, very appealing, like you're saying. And if you can leverage that, you know, you absolutely leverage that. And if there's a way that, like you're saying, there's a way to where, you know, you can have other events that get more support, then I think that you do that. And with the NCAAs, I think it's important that you continue to position that. I mean, you know, it's selling out, it's got a lot of success, but, you know, you continue to find ways to, you know, find locations where it maximizes fan experience. And the great thing about that event is that, you know, to a certain extent, it sells itself. And so it has a high enough demand. If you can leverage that, you know, to get some of the benefits that you talked about, you know, if you can leverage to where you're going to get more, you know, financial incentive to grow certain elements, or they're going to give you other benefits for different events that you do that. And but I think the time also is to, we've got this signature event, it's great, but turn it and say, how do we grow more than that? Because I do think that we have to have more than one. We've got to find a way to have people paying attention more often. If you're relying on a event once a year that comes during March Madness to be your exposure for the sport, I don't know if we're going to reach where we want to reach. And so it's strategically sitting down and saying, you know, how do we position this event and get it to a location where it's really going to keep fans happy and keep them coming back and build on that. But then also sitting down and saying, what do we do next steps, and, you know, to really grow the events that are going to be important for our sports.
I mean, yeah, the national duels question is like this enormous move for a lot of wrestling coaches. I know that the votes have been close and that there's been a lot of, you know, back and forth, obviously, about the issue. So I'm looking forward to seeing what new proposals could be brought out and sort of how we can, you know, if we can assure that there's going to be, I don't want to say capitalization, but if there could be an assured amount of revenue that comes from it, if we can sell it to somebody, we can get the sponsorships, we can get the, you know, whatever it takes, then it becomes, I think, a little bit, I think it'll put some coaches at ease, and it might put the NCAA wrestling committee in a place where they could vote in favor of some big changes like that. But yeah, that's a bear of an issue. I think we could podcast for a few days just on that one thing.
Yeah, man, and as you know, it can be highly controversial depending on the coach that you're talking to. But I'm one, from my perspective, from a marketing standpoint, you know, I agree, you know, with the coaches who feel like dual meets need to matter more. I think we fall short. I think we fail when we have a structure where you have big dual meets and coaches, I'm not even saying coaches are wrong, but coaches sit out some of their top athletes and they miss on top matchups. If I'm dropped, and I'm coming all the way to Oregon State, or I'm coming all the way to one of these regions, and I don't get to see some of these guys, I understand why coaches do it, but there comes a point where you have to find a way to work around that. Dual meets have to matter, because I've told people this. I mean, I would, the Kyle Dake matchup with David Taylor, amazing for wrestling fans. I mean, it would take a long time before people got tired of watching them wrestle. But if you come on my campus right now, or a lot of different campuses across the United States, and you tell them they're wrestling, it doesn't mean anything to them. Right. And what matters to them is their dual meet. You know, UNC wrestling here, that's the part that they can connect to. But if you're going there and the coaches aren't emphasizing winning dual meets and they're more worried about the seeding of their wrestlers and they're not emphasizing the dual aspect because that's not the part that they get rewarded for, I think that you struggle in that way. And they're not only is it the mentality of the sport as a whole, but imagine if you did get that right. And I'm not saying you don't have those two signature events. You have the individual, you have the dual meet championship. Imagine if you had a qualification structure in place where it rewarded different conferences. It got some of the best teams there. But I'm just saying, if teams could be rewarded for winning a conference or finishing in a certain place, and you could get it to the point where it came down to the end of the season and you were able to market those things and get materials out on them, even have some rivalries where you have themed rivalries in place, that's where I think you can draw people in. And right now, I don't think we have that. People do want to see Iowa and Minnesota wrestle and Iowa and Oklahoma State. But when you move beyond that, it's really difficult because our duels don't really mean that much right now. And for a normal consumer, you know, just that small part saying, man, this is for qualification in the national tournament, which is now on television, is a big deal to people. So I think that, you know, it's important for coaches to say, you know, I know it will be more difficult for me, but let's find a way, because I really believe that the team aspect has to matter. Otherwise, you're going to miss on drawing people on campuses. And that's why basketball, and I keep saying basketball, I know there's going to be people at home that hate that because they don't like basketball. But basketball and even football, people are so attached to the team. They love the individual players, but if the team's not there and the team aspect isn't there, they can't latch on to that. So I think that that's something that has to be taken into consideration moving forward.
Yeah, I mean, I think I agree with you. I think there's nothing more frustrating than finding out that your favorite wrestler's not going to be at the match that you're going to attend. I mean, you talk about basketball, the NBA fined the Miami Heat for benching a couple of their players. I'm sorry, the San Antonio Spurs for benching a couple of their players after a four-day road trip. I mean, the San Antonio Spurs are old as dirt, but, you know, and it was a coach's decision, but it's a fan-driven league, and I think wrestling would be do well to take that into account. I think doing it with everyone's attention on it and getting the best ideas to the forefront and having a good discussion is what we need. I think last year was probably just a little rushed.
Yeah.
But I think it did good. I mean, like people have said, you had 76 of the 77 coaches in the – or whatever it was show up to the coaches yeah. summit and have the discussion. So we're moving in the right direction, and hopefully we'll be able to finalize some positive things. I remember I just watched the UNC Virginia one on ESPN a couple of weeks ago, and I used to wrestle for Virginia, so I'm tied to it. But you know, there's other people who were I told my mom and dad about it. They're watching it, and then all of a sudden, you know, their friends who somehow like wrestling, they start watching it on ESPN3. So it's you know, I like that dual meet, and I'm sure if I saw Virginia progress to the Final Eight, you know, I would freak out. I might buy a ticket. You know, there's certain things. And I think, and you can speak to this, but obviously social networking has done well to, you know, what's the really sweet word I'm looking for here? It has done well to get everybody on the same page about their program, you know, inform people about the program and have them become more interested partners. Correct?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. No. I mean, no question about it. It gives you a chance to communicate. I mean, when you think about sport organizations and how they market themselves, younger generations are so important because they become potential people who will keep coming back. And it's not. And social media isn't just that. But you get a chance to reach college students, high school kids, youth individuals. And you get a chance to communicate with them. And when you take advantage of that, like some programs are doing, and you're creating these great videos for them to follow, you're doing giveaways, and you're doing some of these neat things, yeah, you get a chance to communicate with them. And the coolest thing for me, and I think coaches are starting to see this now, but if not, we need to make it clear to them. Every time they build their social media base and even the old school email base, but anytime you build that up and you have engaged people, what that means is not only do you get to promote your events, but now all of a sudden we're going to the national duels or the national championship, and we have a structure in place to really market ourselves. And one of the coolest things that I've seen recently is that when you go and these decisions are made IOC-wise or big decisions are being made in wrestling, you know, the wrestling community is so passionate on social media. And I got to believe it's one of the best fan bases on social media. And it's just like coaches have realized this, fans have realized this. We're not at the point where all of our matches are going to be on television or we're not going to have that type of exposure yet. But we've taken to social media and we're really taking advantage of that. And that's really cool to see. I mean, even during the national duels, I mean, we were trending in areas across the country. And a lot of that is because the passionate wrestling fans have been connected through different programs. And all of a sudden, you have these programs who are promoting the event as well. And I think that's definitely a benefit. So it's just taking those things, knowing those things, and making the right decisions with the actual product. And all of a sudden, you start making some of these cumulative these decisions, you know, where coaches are investing, where you're looking at your rules, where you're considering what your seasonal schedule is as far as how it's positioned for high school athletes and target markets. And you make these decisions for the right reasons. And I really believe that 5-10 years down the road, I think that we see growth rather than losing programs. And that's the trouble is we've got to get coaches and people surrounding the sport to buy in now before we see benefits. And that's the most right. difficult thing.
But I mean, just touching on the last point, I mean, as far as growth, I mean, this is the first year we're going to see growth at every division, correct? I mean, with the addition of SIU, Edwardsville. I mean, I know they count for some people's numbers already because they've been going through the transitional phase, but this will be their first year of competition or ability to, you know, get to the national tournament. And then next year, I think it's Grand Canyon starts the process.
Yeah, I think you're right, yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, and obviously we can go down the hole of talking about Division II and Division III and roster-based programs. But, yeah, there's a lot to be excited about in wrestling. And I think what's cool is that, you know, that you're able to stay in the sport and work on it, that I'm able to stay in the sport and work on it, that – you know, other journalists, that we have people that there is a media developing, and then there's a media developing that people can market to and or, you know, publicize to. So I think that's going to be an important aspect of growth as well. And I'm excited that you and I are part of that, Coit, you know, Just a bunch of old dudes. Just two old guys.
Dude, we're getting kind of old. Yeah, it's and one thing I wanted to touch on that you just you alluded to just a second ago is that I think coaches need to be aware of this fact that you don't have to go on and be a coach to help our sport and to help us grow. In fact, I always tell people, if you want to coach and you're passionate about it, absolutely do that. But I think it's important for coaches to help athletes understand that you can use the skills used and learned in wrestling to do other things. And by going out and becoming, a wide range of different, professionals, you can come back and give to the sport in different ways. And that's the biggest message that I can tell coaches or wrestlers and coaches now is that, you don't always have to be a wrestler. You can sometimes go in a different position, like I'm in now. I know for a fact that I'm doing better for wrestling right now than if I was coaching anywhere in the country. And I think that that's a message that we need to have. I mean, if we're positioning our sport, coaches need to sit down and say, yeah, we want to win, but you should never do that when you're sacrificing the lessons that people can learn to go on and grow our sport from a different place. So I think that's important. And for all the coaches that, well, you can't do that and win. No, you can. I mean, there's people who do that. I mean, John Wooden is a guy who he taught them how to win, but he was teaching his athletes lessons about life. And so for anybody who says you can't win and do that, there are coaches who are doing that and are successful with that. I just think that we need to continue to have a change in the culture of what our sport is to where we value a wide range of things. Winning can still be at the top, and coaches will not listen to me if I told them otherwise, but there's other things that we can be doing right to position our sport.
Right. And I think you also made, that's a cool point that you made, that, if you want to give back, if you want to be a part of the sport, there's lots of ways to try to be a part of the sport, and not just in coaching, but just there's a lot of cool different ways. I mean, this podcast, obviously we have a sponsorship with DedicatedFew.com, and those guys, they're pushing out the new foam finger for wrestling and that kind of thing.
Cool.
Yeah, it's cool, man. It's cool. It's marketable. People love them. I got a bunch of pairs at the house. I wear them all the time just to scare my girlfriend. I wake her up when I'm wearing the ears. It's great times. Wearing those NCAAs, that's cool. That's, that gets you also primary media attention if somebody picks up on that and says, hey, that's a pretty cool thing. Like, that's different. That's not the same thing we're used to seeing, those thunder sticks and all that kind of stuff. So fan promotions and all that kind of giveaway stuff, you have to have the content, and I think people they're doing it.
Yeah, and I love that you brought that up, because that's something that I've been emphasizing to coaches is that, we're not looking – if you want to be really good and you want to grow your sport, you're not going to do it by doing normal and average. I mean, you need to look for some unique ways to entertain fans, to keep them engaged. And the giveaways, like you said, are a great way to do that. But other things is, trying to – if you simplify the rules enough to where you can explain certain aspects, there are ways to engage fans. And that's what the goal has to be. How do we create an entertaining environment where people are coming and they're engaged during the match, where we're teaching them enough to know about takedowns, where, your traditional fan bases, you have they're screaming two before they're getting a takedown. How do you educate people enough to where they're engaged? Because that's so, so important. I always tell people, I've experienced different football environments, and when I came to UNC, it was kind of quiet during the game, and I was kind of like, this is strange, because I just come from West Virginia University, and they have history, and they've educated their fans. And I'm telling you, during the game, my wife is not a hardcore sports fan, but you would go there, and they would get a first down, and they had taught their fans, every time you did a first down, you do this chant, you go, woo, 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 first down. And my wife loved that stuff. Like, she didn't know always what was going on, but the fact that she was constantly engaged with something and it was fun to her meant that it was a lot easier for me to go to games. And so you have to think about how do we make it fun for people.
That's a really good idea. It wasn't necessarily an idea, but that's a good point. That's a good anecdote, because that kind of thing could bring in people like my girlfriend, who could just as easily sleep through a wrestling match as watch any minute of it. And, I think it's important to get people engaged in the process and excited about it. And I think there's larger issues with wrestlers in general about being stubborn, and you see it all around the world, and you see it in FILA, you see it in IOC, now with the effect on the IOC. But hey, Coit, we appreciate your time, man. I know you got to get running, you're a busy guy, and where can people check out some of your stuff? What's the website?
Yeah, you can check out some of the stuff. If you go to the NWCA website, they have a marketing manual area. But if you want to go to where I have some marketing stuff for coaches and people, you can go to EliteLevelSportMarketing.com. And there's a coaches resource center there where you can go in and see the marketing manual that we've created. You can see a lot of articles for coaches. So there, those are areas where, you know, we're going to continue to add those things and any help to grow that. I mean, I just want to help coaches. And so the more that know about it, the better. So if people out there can, you know, if they're on Twitter and they can share that link, then I would be very appreciative because we want to help the sport. We want to grow it. There is nobody more important than coaches. And in that process, we can help. You and I can help. I mean, there's ways that we can promote. We can help them understand certain things. But you're right. I mean, you just said some a second ago that some of our people, some of our wrestlers are stubborn. This is not something that we can afford to be stubborn on, meaning, oh, we're just going to coach wrestling and that's it. Because what's going to happen is it may not impact you as a coach, but it's going to impact your kid if they want to coach at some point. So we've got to take the next step, not be stubborn, embrace what's going on, and really take, you know, these marketing concepts and get moving. And if everybody does that, I have no doubt that wrestling will be okay in the future. Not only okay for all the people that out there that are throwing that niche name out, it only remains niche for the amount of time that we want it to. If we can get all on one board, I think we can move beyond that, extend television coverage, extend interest. And I'll end now because I can talk forever about this stuff.
No, man, it's great stuff. I'm getting motivated. I'm like doing push-ups and stuff. All right. All right, man. We'll definitely have to get you back on here. Really appreciate your time, man.
No, I appreciate you talking and spreading the message and all you do for the sport.
All right, brother.
All right, talk to you later, man.
Bye.
I didn't take my fucking shoes off.
So you're still, yeah, still in it.
We are live from Snowpocalypse, Chicago, 2013, take two. Brian Muir, how are you?
T.R. Foley, how's it going?
Oh, you know, I'm just trying to survive in this climate. Trying to.
We made it through what seemed like the majority of the winter. Hit end of Feb, early March, and we're just getting hammered.
I mean, it's definitely the season's a late bloomer. It's a late blooming season.
You know what though? We got 2 weeks, and we're out.
Well, we your 2 weeks is not going to happen. To anybody who doesn't know this, Brian Muir is the world's least effective, accomplished, knowledgeable weatherman. He last year lost $100 in a bet about when the first 70-degree day would be in Chicago. One that he lost to me. It felt great, but this wet snow, I don't know. This is...
Well, you got to also tell everybody that you were all over weather.com that day.
Hey, remember the time you made a bet and you didn't already have the answer? Come on. That's what we do when we bet. We think we know something is going to happen. I still can't... Even if it said that it was going to happen, I can't predict.
I don't know about you, but I went to the fine establishment, Thomas Jefferson's UVA. So I'm on the honor code at all times.
Yeah,
I live by those rules.
Okay.
So. But that's fine. I mean, if you feel good about it, that's cool.
I think you just need to realize that there is a limited amount of knowledge that you have about weather cycles. Just admit it. All right, let's make a bet. When is there going to be the first 70-degree day?
First 70-degree weather day in Chicago. We're talking in Chicago?
Of course, in Chicago.
While I'm in Bali.
Wait, you just made a bet for like a 3-week window?
I made a 2-week window.
You don't have a window. You have a day. You're allowed to say a day. And then I can take it or not take it.
Or a period of days. I will say before April 1st.
How much would you like to bet?
I will put $50 on that.
It's Chicago.
Chicago. Chi-town.
April 1st.
April 1st.
70 degrees.
I know you're stalling, so you're looking at the internet right now. So I'm going to go immediate. This is
sure. Yeah, no, it's sold. $50. Okay. Sold. I just want to make sure we had everything written down. I'm sold. I can't. There's no weather pattern I could access that quickly that's going to tell me whether or not it's going to happen. I mean, I think I like your side of the bet, but I still am going to take the bet because I don't know. I just want to see you suffer. I want to see you. Well, I'm going to be the person suffering.
You've suffered enough over here.
Just so everybody knows in the podcast, Muir, who is a one percenter, will be in Bali for 2 weeks. So we've gone ahead and replaced him with some special guests. We're going to have some King Mo on the show. Some other delightful guests. So I got some breaking news for you, Brian.
Big shoes to fill. Big shoes to fill. What's that?
Did you know, and you didn't, that that the Big 12 is going to run a round robin tournament on Friday? Basically, they're going to duel each other, all four teams, on Friday. And then they're going to wrestle a tournament against each other on Saturday.
What?
This is the dumbest idea. I think it has something to do with, like...
Did this just happen?
Yeah. To meeting conference requirements about, like, having home dual meets or something. I don't know, but it's truly one of the worst ideas I've ever heard. I mean, you're going to re-wrestle the same guys? Like, what about the conference bids? Like,
that's a really bad idea. I mean, do you think a lot of the teams sit their guys?
I would sit everybody.
That makes no sense to me at all.
Who's going to – I mean, there's a million things wrong with it, but
– what if Jordan Oliver gets hurt?
That – I don't think they should wrestle them.
Yeah. No, I agree. Doesn't make sense to me at all. So I have the – it would take too long to go through every conference.
Of course.
First of all, I'm going to take all the negativity that's outside in the snow. I'm going to turn it around. And I'm going to say that we have a big weekend coming up. You and I get to spend a weekend in College Park together watching Wahoo Wah UVA. You're going to be commentating. Is that right?
I am. I'm using this beautiful voice for good instead of evil.
And we have conferences. So we can talk about ACC, but I think we're better. Our time is better spent talking about Big Tens.
Okay.
What he wants to know about.
Oh, I totally agree.
Right. So I don't know how you want to do this. We can go through. I don't think doesn't make sense to make a line for every weight. I think it'll get kind of tedious and repetitive.
Of course.
But if you want to ask a few lines along the way, then I'm here for you.
Okay.
So I'm going to go through each weight. I'm going to tell you how I think it's going to play out. You can jump in, ask me any individual spreads you want to know, individual lines you want to know, and we'll go from there.
Okay.
All right?
Okay.
So 125, you've got top three guys. I'm going to call these guys, I just thought of this today, rock, paper, scissor.
Okay.
McDonough, Megalutis, Delgado, rock, paper, scissor. Rock beats paper beats rock. Rock beats paper beats scissor. Scissor beats rock.
okay.
Rock beats paper. Paper covers rock. I did it backwards. Yes. Paper covers rock. Rock smashes scissor. Scissor cuts paper. Nothing beats rock, though. You know that.
Right.
So McDonough nabs the first seed. I was a little surprised that he got the first seed. Were you?
No.
I guess he's returning champ. I mean, Megalutis only has one loss. I guess it is to McDonough. McDonough's got two losses now. Anyway, no, so
Nico has an early season loss to somebody else. Maybe not in the conference, but and he definitely lost to somebody else. To the kid from Pittsburgh.
Oh, you're right. You're right. He did. Okay. That makes sense then. So, yeah, he lost to Zanetta 3-2. So you got McDonough top seed, Megalutis Delgado on the bottom half. I mean, I don't really see a fourth guy sneaking in there, do you?
No.
So you've got paper and scissor down below. Paper, what do we know about paper and scissor? Scissor.
Yes.
Beats paper. I'm going to say Megalutis keeps a streak over Delgado, gets past Delgado in the semis, sets up a McDonough rock paper match in the final. McDonough edges out Megalutis again in the final to take his, I believe, fourth Big Ten title.
Right. I don't know if it's his fourth Big Ten title. I don't have the internet right now functioning for me very quickly, but I would say that
third Big Ten title.
Oh, okay, I was going to say I think he might have dropped one somewhere in there.
Lost kid from Indiana his freshman year.
Joe Dubuque?
No, after him.
No clue. Blanking.
All right, we'll get it. We'll come back to it. So anyway, I got McDonough taking it at 25. I think he wins another. I think Megalutis wins close against Delgado. McDonough wins close against Megalutis. If Delgado can somehow get past Megalutis, I think he beats. It seems like, for whatever reason, Delgado's got the answer for McDonough. He gets in on him. He's able to finish on him now, which was the big.
Well, so then basically what you have to concede then, too, is that in this matchup, because Megalutis obviously made it closer and close. I mean, it's always a close match with those two. But say Megalutis beats Delgado again, makes it to the finals, and McDonough's there, which, by the way, no guarantee McDonough's in the finals. Do you think that you don't think Megalutis is going to have a game plan which he thinks can absolutely beat McDonough? Because all he's got to do is take him down at this point.
Yeah, well, he might watch the Waters match. He might watch the Delgado match and see how they're finishing on him. Because he's on it. You can't finish on him right now. I don't know if he's taken him down yet. So, yeah, maybe they're working on their finishes and trying to do something that Delgado and Waters have been able to pull off. But I think also the grind of making weight and the grind of the Big Ten season has really affected McDonough maybe more than anybody else. And we're seeing that in his wrestling. So these past 2 weeks off, hopefully, and I think, gets him back on track. He was my guy in the beginning of the year, the biggest lock to win the NCAA title. And he's no longer that guy, but I do see him winning in the postseason this year. Even though it's a tough weight. It's a stacked weight. But yeah, it's going to be a good match. I think Megalutis is going to come out firing. I think he may even get a takedown, but I think McDonough pulls it off. Plus, he's got an easier road to the final. I think he's a guarantee to make the final. I don't really see who's beating him in the semi.
Okay.
But.
Well, I guess you're right. I think everything's going to pretty much happen on the other side. You're probably. I'll retract my earlier statement about him having trouble, but.
I'll let you out of that one. So, those guys beat each other up in the semi. McDonough waits in the final. Plus, Iowa needs them to win if they have any shot of upsetting Penn State, which is really no shot at all. So, that's 25. I would say McDonough's probably even money to win it. Megalutis, Delgado, somewhere around plus 150 for each of them.
Okay.
All right. 133. This is the match, this is the marquee match of the weekend. Logan Staber, Tony Ramos. The one guy that could play spoiler is Tyler Graff, who's got a win over Ramos 2 years ago. Ramos is obviously a different wrestler now.
Yeah, and Graff got punished by Jordan Conaway in a comeback. I mean, I think he's going to take his lunch money. But you're right, he does have that win. And Tyler Graff is somebody who can wrestle. I mean, it's not like it would be obnoxious to see him.
He's tough. He made the semis 2 years ago. He's a two-time All-American, I think. He may have just missed his freshman year. But I don't see Ramos having trouble with him, but could be a close match, and if Graf's gas tank is anywhere near where it should be, then we could see something crazy happen. But let's assume that we're going to see Staber and Ramos in the final. We talked about this last week, and it's going to be Staber minus a point and a half. And I think you have money on Staber, right?
Of course
you do.
So I got Ramos. I think Ramos is going to win not only that bet, but the Big Ten as well. So.
Okay. And then is he also going to win Nationals?
No, I got Stieber coming back in Nationals to beat him.
Oh, okay.
I think Ramos wins. I think Ramos wins this weekend for some reason.
Okay.
All right. 41. I don't see. The way Dardane's been wrestling lately, I don't see him losing a ball wave. Hunter Stieber's still undefeated. Let's assume he's going to make the final. Stieber, Dardane's, they wrestled once already. Stieber won a close match. I think he wins another close match. He's going to be minus 2 points in the finals over Dardane's. And I got Hunter Stieber pretty much a lock to win his first Big Ten title.
Isn't it weird that he's so talented, undefeated, returning All-American? Yeah.
And he's the other Stieber brother.
He's the other, but people just do not think about him. I just wrote an article about on the Platinum service today for Intermat. We just wrote an article, about the Intermat, you know, Wrestler of the Year candidates, and I can be honest. Little Stieber didn't even cross my mind.
I saw that. I actually read the article.
Because
I don't think he's got the win. He doesn't have the big bonus point wins to put him in the running for it.
There's just no concept. There's just no way that he could be the best wrestler of the year unless all 10 of those guys in front lost. But even then, you would have to have a non-Taylor, non-Dake final. Now, that's true for a lot of guys. But you're right. He doesn't have any of these like quality wins. So you can't even really put him to the top 10. And you know who you really can't either is Kendrick Maple. But I like Kendrick Maple, so I did.
It depends how they win. I mean, if Kendrick Maple just tears through NCAAs and takes out Stieber, you know, the way he's been taking out everybody else, he could be in the discussion.
But he hasn't. He only beat Mitchell Port by a couple of points. He struggled mightily with Searsis, the red shirt from Northwestern. So there's not like he's not as nearly as dominant as someone like Dustin Kilgore, who's got so many pins and a mustache.
I would say with pretty good confidence that the Intermat Wrestler of the Year is not coming out of 141.
No.
Or the Hodge for that point.
I've never heard of this award, the Hodge.
It's an old one back in the day. I'm not even sure if they still do it, but for now, it's the Intermat Wrestler of the Year award. We need a better name for that, by the way. But
we're just finding. We're just thinking of somebody to name it after.
Name it after me.
I think, to be honest with you, I think we should name it the Kale Sanderson Wrestler of the Year award.
Yeah.
I mean, think about it. Like, why would you not name it after him? Let's modernize this thing. We're doing it right now on the show. Are you ready?
Seems pretty logical at this point.
Seems logical. The Kale Sanderson Wrestler of the Year Award goes to.
My opinion?
Yeah.
I think it comes down to Kyle Dake and Ed Ruth. Unless they somehow both lose, then Taylor and Oliver.
So Taylor doesn't get it by beating Dake?
I don't think so.
Because he has a loss to Dake?
Yeah.
And Dake's a 3-time defending national champion?
Yeah, but, I mean, what's the criteria?
That's the thing. There is no real criteria. That's why storylines and everything matter. Because, I mean, David Taylor has been way more dominant than Kyle Dake.
David Taylor is more dominant than Kyle Dake, for sure. But Ed Ruth and David Taylor are pretty similar. Ed Ruth and, Kilgore and David Taylor are similar, but Kilgore and Ruth will probably end with zero losses. Even though it is Dake, I mean, I don't know. I think it's between Dake and Ruth, outside shot of Kilgore, outside shot of Oliver as well.
There's no way. Keep going, because you're just making a fool of yourself.
Well, who do you got? Who's on your list?
Well, I think it's the David Taylor, Kyle Dake winner. But I mean, I would totally vote for Alan Waters if he wins.
I would vote for Hunter Stieber. I mean, Waters? No, Waters doesn't get it. Okay. I don't think.
Okay. Well, no, he doesn't. But doesn't mean he's not going to get one vote.
He might get a vote.
I'm not sure who that vote would be. This guy.
Yeah, I think it's Dake. I think it's Dake's to lose, and if he does lose, sure, you can throw it to Taylor again. But that's kind of boring. Give it to somebody else. All right.
Spread it around, kids.
Spread it around. Well, who got it last year? Ruth, right?
Yes. Surprise, actually. He wasn't even... He was like a dark horse for me. Anyways.
Pretty dominating year, but... All right. 149 is very interesting. Eric Grijalis, number one seed. I didn't see that coming for some reason.
I mean, I think because it's not the strongest weight class for them.
It's not the strongest weight class, but he just, I guess my real impression of him this year was from Vegas.
Yeah.
Where he got piss pounded by an unknown. He got almost majored and just gave up. And then didn't finish well in that tournament, but looks like he's been on a little bit of a streak lately. He's got a close win over Soufflon. The match that everybody wants to see in this one is... Go ahead.
I don't know.
All right, I'll help you out. Andrew Alton and Dylan.
Oh, yeah. What did you say, though? I cut you off. I'm sorry, so you can hear.
Yeah, Alton Ness. Alton is somehow the sixth seed. I don't know. That seems strange to me. But he did lose to Soufflon. He lost to Tesseri. So, Ivan Lupachansky. Lupachansky?
Mm-hmm.
That's how we're going to say that.
Lupachansky?
He's actually got one loss. He's only got one loss somehow. So, I guess he makes sense as the third seed. So, I see Alton taking him out. And I see... Ness getting through on his side, so that's a semi that everyone wants to see, everyone's looking forward to. I am going to say Ness is going to take that one. He's a 2-point favorite over Alton.
That's so weird that Grijalis is the top seed.
Yeah, it didn't make sense to me either.
That's also the pre-seeds, so it could change.
Right, it could change. So I actually also think that Soufflon, he's a guller, he's a scrapper. He's coming from the probable four seed. So, I think he takes out Grijalis in the semis. And I wouldn't doubt if he surprises some people this weekend. Okay. But you've also got Tesseri in there. Those two are going to meet in the quarters to see who takes on Grijalis.
Wait, so how many All-Americans are below Grijalis at the one seed? Soufflon? Alton?
Alton is not an All-American, actually.
Wait, he's not?
No.
Oh, he didn't? He redshirted and now he's back?
Ness is definitely an All-American. Soufflon, maybe. Tesseri is definitely an All-American.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it didn't really make sense to me, but he must have done well in his Big Ten schedule. Well enough to get the top seed, so.
Yeah.
I don't see him winning.
No.
I think he breaks at some point, but we'll see.
That's a pretty direct way to talk about.
as that came out of my mouth, it sounded.
I think he's a big freaking wuss. And no, I mean.
He just hasn't had the motor that he had in high school. I mean, am I wrong for saying that?
No.
All right.
You know, he was like number three squished between David Taylor, Ed Ruth, and Kyle Dake.
Yeah, exactly. He was a stud in high school. Actually, him and Oliver had pretty good matchups in high school, which surprisingly were won by Grijalis, I think.
Mm-hmm.
So we could see that. See the sequel to that stuff go on in Nationals, which would be interesting. I think Dylan Ness takes the weight. He's shook off most of his rust, it seems like, from beginning of the year injury. And I don't really see who's going to beat him. Maybe Alton, if he catches him or something. But I think he beats Alton. He's got too much of a motor for him.
Mm-hmm.
And too much of a motor for Grijalis in the final. So Ness is your champ.
I hate to interrupt this. I just, for some reason, and I agree with you, by the way. But for some reason, I have to go off topic here. Just take a little break. We're at 49 or 57?
We are finished with 49.
Okay, so we're coming in 57, which I knew. I don't know why I asked that question. I would like to state that the Transportation Safety Administration has now allowed pocket knives back on airplanes.
Is that right?
I'm not a genius by any stretch.
You can't even take a nail clipper out in an airplane.
You can now take retractable 2.4-inch or less blades onto an airplane.
I figured
that after this much time, I mean, has it really been that big of an issue? Have people been freaking out about this for 10 years? I mean, at this point, you just know not to bring a knife, right? So now it's going to be confusing about which size knife. Oh, I thought it was two. No, it has to be 2.4. What are they going to do, measure the knives every time they come through?
Probably.
This is a ridiculous. I mean, was there really a big push by people to say, like, I can't believe I can't bring my pocket knife? You're also allowed to bring baseball bats and golf clubs on.
The baseball bat, for whatever reason, seems like it'd be much more dangerous than the pocket knife.
But you can't bring box cutters on.
I don't know. That, it doesn't make sense to me.
It makes sense to me either. I'm not saying I know. What is this?
You can't bring 4 ounces of liquid on.
You can't bring shampoo on.
You can't bring 4.1 ounces of anything liquid on.
It's unbelievable. Right? Unbelievable.
Well, what else you got? You want to keep going? Or?
Yeah, let's go 57. Just wanted to interject that.
It's an interesting fact. I don't hate it. 157.
Okay.
Derek St. John, DSJ. Probable one seed over Intermat's number one ranked Jason Welch.
I mean, Jason Welch lost to James Green. Dare James St. Green. John lost to, I was going to say Drake Hudeschild, but it's the other kid, Kyle Bradley.
Kyle Bradley, yeah. Yeah, I agree with St. John being number one ranked as well as number one seed. I don't think you can, I mean, he hasn't lost to anyone in the Big Ten. Welch has.
So. I agree with it too. I think overall nationally, I think it's. I mean, you can't take into account past seasons. So right now, if the national tournament happened and there was no Big 12 tournament, I think that DSJ is the 2 seed, not the 1 seed. But I can see how, if you looked at it from just the Big 10's perspective, it would be DSJ. And then we're going to obviously get resolution on who the true 1 and 2 seeds are.
Right. And I don't think it makes a whole lot of difference for Big Ten, because I think James Green and Alton are both pretty interchangeable for a semis match.
Right.
So, actually, I think it hurts St. John slightly because it seems like he's got a little edge over Alton, but James Green is always gets out to a lead against him and then kind of folds at the end, but yeah, I think Green seems like a worse matchup for St. John for some reason. So we'll see what happens there. But interesting factoid: 2 South Jersey guys ranked seed 4th and 5th, both out of Region 8, I believe, maybe Region 7.
That's awesome, Brian.
Meet up in the quarters. Taylor Walsh, me, James Green. Taylor Walsh, not on a whole lot of people's radar, but...
Is he on yours?
He's on mine. He's on my radar. So, I've got Green winning the match, but you can see a little pride with who's the best in South Jersey, Region 7 type thing going on.
Okay.
The quarters. Don't be surprised if it's a close match, but probably see those top 4 move on to the semis. I got Welch and Alton.
Yeah, that's crazy. And I don't know.
Match. Yeah. That is a match. I think Alton's up 2-1 over him.
Okay.
And I think Welch evens it up. I'm going to take Welch.
So what's the... you're going to take Welch? So I'm not going to bet against that because I believe in Welch.
All right. Well, don't bet with your emotions. Bet with your head. but I'll give you. Yeah, no, I think it's a straight up pick 'em match.
Yeah, it is.
I can't give you anything. How about St. John James Green? What's your line on that?
I'll take. I think it's a pick 'em.
You think it's a pick 'em? I'll take St. John.
Okay, I'll take James Green.
All right. How much?
$5.
All right.
I wouldn't mind some points now, but I'll take it for $5.
What if I gave you a point?
I'll make it. If you give me a point and a half, I'll make it $50.
Yeah. Yeah, I'd give you a point. That's about it.
A point and a half is $50.
I like James Green. I'm not gonna give that kind of point.
Okay.
I think St. John's your favorite, but I could see Green pulling off the upset.
Okay.
He's been close. Anyway, probably get a DSJ Welch Big Ten rematch.
Okay.
Hopefully. Everyone wants to see that one. St. John has never lost to him, so he's going to be a... Give a point and a half is tough. I think he's a point favorite over Welch.
No, I think you have to give at least a point and a half, don't you?
I don't know. For betting purposes, maybe, but he beat him last year, what, 3-4-3, right at the
buzzer.
15 seconds. He beat him a little worse in the semis, I think, maybe by like 2 points. So you're right in there. Sure. Let's say St. John minus 1.5.
I'll take Welch.
Just to get some action. I would take Welch there. So I think St. John wins it. I think he, whatever reason, he's got the answer to Welch's funkiness.
I think because he's himself pretty funky.
He is pretty funky. He's long. He's tough to funk out of stuff with. He's tough to finish. He's obviously tough to finish on.
All right, so 65, there's really nothing compelling there.
Let's say David Taylor minus $3 billion. Conrad Poles plus $3 billion. Taylor Massa, maybe he makes a final. That'd be kind of cool.
Yeah, that'd be nice. I like to see their freshman class is down for several reasons, but they're kind of down this year, and it'd be nice to see him do well.
Yeah, it'd be cool to see him in the final. Conrad Poles is tough. He's given Taylor a decent match this year. Apparently, almost had him stuck in the dual meet. But anyway, yeah, David Taylor's going to win. So, 74. The weight of the weekend.
Well, let's just jump ahead. 84 obviously is locked up.
No, I don't think it is.
Stop it.
The Bear Jew, and we're going to continue calling him the Bear Jew, even though he's not Jewish.
Yeah, I don't even have confirmation that he's not Jewish.
Me neither. I have no idea. Maybe the Bear German?
The Bear German. God damn it. It's so funny to me. People freaked out on that mailbag. Or not, they didn't even, nobody really freaked out about that. Just one guy with his like name calling. But comments are always good. But my goodness, people are...
Yeah. I mean, by no means do we know. I don't know who anyone's...
I don't have anybody's ethnicity.
Affiliation.
No.
Whatever. Okay.
Even unless they posted on Twitter that they, you know, are following Christ and want him to do well for them.
Right.
Then, yeah. So.
Anyway. Let's just call him the Bear then, I guess.
Call him the Bear Jew. It's great.
All right, he's the Bear Jew. So, man, that's a match I want to see.
Good, I'm glad you want to see it. It doesn't matter.
I don't know, man. I think he's strong enough to keep it somewhat close. He's good enough.
Great. He can keep it within a stratosphere. He's not going to do any damage to Ruth. How many points are you going to put on it?
3.5.
I'll take Ruth.
Done.
How much?
$50.
Sold.
All right. Write it down. 197. Quentin Wright. Scott Schiller, Mario Gonzalez, Andrew Campolitano. Looking forward to Quentin Wright, Campolitano in the semi.
Me too.
That'd be a cool match.
I think it was like 6-3 the first time they went. Or no, Campolitano wrestled Kilgore to 6'3".
Yeah, he's wrestled Kilgore. He's gotten closer every time, but Wright and Campolitano haven't wrestled yet. Campolitano's been out, hurt maybe, so he wasn't there for the dual meet. But that'll be a cool match. Hopefully Campolitano comes back healthy and ready to go, but Wright wins that one. I think Schiller looks like he's the guy down below, unless Iowa pulls some magic off with Burak somehow, sneaks in there. Oh, Braden Atwood. You know who that is?
Yeah, he beat me. Well, I pinned him, and then he came back and beat me.
Did the ref call a stick? I don't know that.
He didn't, and he was lectured greatly for it.
Is that... Man, that might be top five most gassed humans I've ever seen in my life.
I could have laid down on the mat and died.
I saw it in your face. I've never seen somebody like so gassed they look like they want to cry, but you look like you wanted to cry. It just looked painful.
It was painful. My lungs were burning. My world, which had, you know, I had a 180 degree view of things in the world, had whittled down to like this little pinhole. I could only see barely in front of my face.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah, I felt it for you in the stands.
When you get a lot of heart, you just keep going, and that's what I did. I just kept going. I mean, I think, yeah, there's. It's hard. No, and the thing is, like, I had the early pin, and if they'd given that to me, I would have cruised to the tournament.
Yeah, you probably would have taken out Hamlin at that point with that momentum.
Yeah, not just momentum. I mean, it was just skill, really.
Yeah. So anyway, the guy that dominated you, Brandon Atwood, is the fifth seed. Do you want to make any lines on him?
No.
No? You're just going to let him go?
Let him go.
All right. Well, that'd be a nice story if he somehow came through with a title.
Yeah, it'd be great.
You won Big Tens kind of by association. So I'm going to say, dude, Schiller. This guy Schiller is tough. He laid it on Burak, who I thought was getting a lot better. He looked a lot better mid-season, but there's a chance that Iowa may have peaked for that Penn State match and just kind of not really wrestling on all cylinders right now.
No, I agree. And I think also they just went through a huge meat grinder.
Yeah, right. I mean, their schedule's beyond tough.
Because Penn State that stupid for not going to the national duels now?
Yeah, nobody. Who remembers the national duels in 2 weeks? Nobody.
Right.
So, Schiller, Quentin Wright. Quentin Wright's your favorite. I'm going to say he's a favorite by a point. 2 points.
Okay.
Sold. 2 point favorite over Schiller. 2.5. I'm going to adjust it right now. 2.5.
Okay.
Heavyweight. How many matches are in the tournament? How many matches are in one bracket?
15.
15. Over under for total points scored in a heavyweight bracket is 15.5. And I'm going to say Nelson may get the over. I guess by default he would have to be the guy because he's going to win. And
that's what's cool about the. There's no with them. There's no that weight class. The top three. There's no crossover conference. So it's going to be all happening at nationals.
Yeah. Right. Right. That's another good way to nationals. Should be very interesting. Who gets the top seed there?
I think right now it's going to stay the same. Nelson, Galagaya, Bradley.
Nelson, Galagaya, Bradley. Hold on 1 second. Interesting. So, yeah. So, Bradley's got a win over Nelson.
Yeah, it's the same way.
Galagaya's got a win over Bradley. Yeah, I gotcha. Okay. Yeah, so Tony Nelson wins. I mean, I think he probably wrestles McMullen in the final. You know, you can make your own line on that one.
So let's go back to 74. That's what we care about.
Okay, back to 74. Is it possible for a weight to be tougher at Big Tens than it is at Nationals.
It's the toughest weight class.
You're missing Perry. You're missing Asper. You're missing the kid Porter from Missouri, who's actually looked really tough. But besides that, everybody's pretty much here. Everybody else is in the weight.
Just fantastic.
Fantastic. It's worth the price of admission just for that weight.
Just awesome, really.
So I saw your breakdown on you did a little breakdown last week on it, right?
I did.
And you've got Kokesh winning?
Bob Kokesh.
B.O.B. Kokesh?
I like Bob.
Yeah, no, he's tough, obviously. I just can't see him getting past Evans. I think Evans is, for whatever reason, he's got his number. And he doesn't beat him close. He just beats him.
Right.
So I got Evans making the final over Kokesh in the semi. Jordan Blanton, I don't think he beats Kokesh. So you see Evans, Kokesh in the semi. Evans again beats him. I think they met in the semi last year, and Evans tech-falled him in the Big Ten semi.
Yeah, you said that. I know. I just think Kokesh is – I know. I don't know why. Sometimes I'd say stupid shit, and that's the one of the times. But I just think Bob Kokesh is going to get done because I like the fact that his name is Robert Kokesh.
That's all I wanted to hear. All I wanted to hear.
But it should be Bob. Wait, are Roberts or Bobs, right?
Yeah, you can make a Robert a Bob.
You can make a Bill a Bob too, right?
I think you make a William a Bill.
You can't make a Bill a Bob?
I don't think so.
My late grandfather, his name is Jeremiah Robert, and he went by equally, went like 50-50, went by Jerry and by Bob.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. Some people will call him Bob, and some people will call him Jerry, and I just thought it was interesting because those two names are just not even close to each other. So who do you have on the top side? Because you have Storley and Yates in the quarter. Storley takes that.
Storley.
Heflin Brown.
Yates. Oh, Matt Brown. I think Matt Brown is a really bad matchup for Storley. I think he's the guy that can take Storley out.
What?
Yeah.
Nobody saw you coming with this one. Why? Because he's so funky and all that stuff that Storley does from bottom wouldn't either work or put himself in danger? Is that your thought?
My thought is I watched their first match. My first thought is that he already has a win over him from last year. Did it transition over this year? Not yet. But their first match this year, I don't know. Brown was all over his head. Storley just didn't look like he wanted to even be in the match. And he kind of pulled that pin out of nowhere. It was a weird, like, funky type.
Yeah.
And he came out on top. Besides that, the match was 0-0 in the end of the second period. So, I don't know. I'm taking Brown. I think Storley's a favorite, but I think we see some upsets in this weight. And that's one of them.
Do you think Heflin beats Brown, beats Storley, goes to finals, meets Evans?
No, I think Brown beats Heflin, beats Storley, beats Evans in the final.
So you're with me, but you think that instead of Bobby K making the finals and beating Brown, you think Brown beats...
Did you have Brown in the final?
I think so.
Oh, you did? No. Oh. I don't feel as special now.
I can't imagine that I would not choose Matt Brown to make the finals, considering I have a man crush on him. Yeah, number 5 Brown versus number 3 Kokesh.
Okay. Well, yeah, I got Kokesh. I got Evans Brown.
And you
there's got... There's no way Kokesh is beating Evans.
Okay.
He's just not going to do it.
You give me 14 and a half points?
Man, it would be special if he tech-falled him again, but... And I don't see that happening either. I think he wins 5-3.
Okay. Bob must have been hurt. I don't know Bob well, but I'm pretty sure Bob was hurt.
Dude, Bobby, I think Bobby's just, I don't know, Evans is in his head.
It's true.
Evans is in his head.
Could be true.
So Evans, Brown, good match last time. Brown was not too far away from winning that one. And I'm going to take Matt Brown. I'm going to take Matt Brown to win it. I just thought of it as I said it.
I thought it, and then I said it, and so
Evans was coming out. I almost went Evans, and I switched it to Brown. I'm going to take Matt Brown.
Matt Brown. All
from
right.
The 5 seed. Coming from the 5 seed to win it.
Man, Big Ten's is a grind.
Big Ten's is a grind. So, other good tournaments this weekend. ACC's, you'll be there. I'll be there.
Yeah, we can talk about ACC's. Nobody cares, but we can talk about ACC's all day.
Yeah.
There's a lot of interesting stuff going on at that tournament.
125 alone is great.
Oh,
that's going to be good.
Great tournament. I'm excited. Bunkmate.
Yeah, get my pillow nice and fluffed up for me, would you?
Go ahead and fluff my pillow, you stewardess. I'm hoping that because I'll be in kind contribution of a room to you, I'm hoping I get dinner out of this thing.
Yeah. Yeah, you can do that.
I mean, I'm not getting invited to the Blackhawks game tonight. History would probably be made tonight, but that's cool. I'm fine at the house. It's Taco Tuesday. It's Taco Tuesday in Chateau de Lime. And
is that right?
Yeah. My parents now refer to it as Chateau de Lime. I don't know why.
That's probably appropriate.
Yeah. And, it's Taco Tuesday. So I make an insanely good guacamole. My cooking game has completely changed. It's beyond anything you can sort of understand at this point.
I will take my curry over your curry and my guacamole over your guacamole.
No, you can say all you want about the guacamole. You're not going to beat my guacamole.
Guacamole is not hard to do.
And it's not hard to do. A lot of people just don't do it right. But, yeah, it's not hard to do. I just got to look at the results. And looking at my guacamole, it's one of those things where...
Well, who is eating this guacamole?
Myself and Sue Lim.
So you have Sue. I mean, if you're only two people there, she's not going to tell you it's bad.
She would be honest.
I don't think so.
Or she just won't eat it. So she'll, even if she says something's good, she'll just push it to the side of her plate, and then I'll know it's not good. In one certain way, she is still a child. She will take her food and spread it out across the...
she might just be tossing in the garbage when you're not looking. I'm sure you make a great guacamole. I don't know why.
I make the best guacamole. But the question is, Brian, what do you think makes your curry better than my curry? Because I don't see your curry doing anything to me.
I've perfected it at this point. I've made it enough times. I've trial and errored the whole thing out.
You don't like spicy stuff, right? You kind of don't like spicy stuff. You're a little bit of a child in that sense.
Myself? No, yeah. I love spicy stuff.
Right. So you don't like spicy stuff. So yeah. You know, Brian, I think maybe what we can do is we can have a chili cook-off. A curry cook-off.
A curry cook-off. I'm in.
Man, your voice sounds so much better than it did a couple of minutes ago.
Does it?
Yeah. So crisp.
That must be on your end. Technical difficulties over there.
10 inches of snow in Chicago in the West Loop. Asking for it. We're asking for it. Brian, it's been great. Thank you so much for your we always enjoy having you on the podcast, Brian.
Pleasure being here. Matt Snyder, ACC champ.
I would hope so, but I don't think it's going to happen. Unless he's down blocking and learning how to defend.
I think he gets hot.
I think he has got a much better chance of placing at nationals than he does winning ACCs.
That might be true. That's a tough weight, though. Very tough weight. Actually, three of the top 10 guys are in the ACC.
That's how we roll in the ACC.
That is how we roll.
Brian, I'm really excited for our trip. When do you leave? Friday?
Saturday morning. I'll be there.
That's incredible. Really excited. Really excited. We should post. We're going to start posting photos to Instagram. Instagram's the new thing.
I'll let you handle it.
You can't even do it,
Instagram's
huh?
Instagram's a new thing? I feel like Instagram's been around for, I don't know, 2 years?
Yeah, but I'm just learning Instagram.
Gotcha.
So.
Do you know, well, I'm not going to say that.
Well, go ahead.
I'm going to go joke for you later on, but it's not appropriate for... podcast talk.
Gotcha.
But anyway, I got a Hawks game to go to and some dinner to eat, so
I'm gonna sit here by myself in my apartment and cry myself.
Have fun on Taco Tuesday.
It's Taco Tuesday. All right, buddy.
Guacamole.
Adios, amigo.
Bye.